reading this week is in Joshua 20. If you want to go grab your Bible, head over there with us. This will be a really time-consuming read for you this week.
One of the short ones.
All of
David's being facetious. One of the short
nine
ones.
Nine verses.
Yeah.
And we're out of the tribes getting their part, so some relief from all of that detail.
Yeah.
About how the land was settled.
Until chapter 21 again.
Yeah. But then we move on to the cities of refuge, which, wow, this is just a whole interesting angle on life in the ancient world. Maybe we ought to open with that.
Yeah.
That when you read this, you got to be careful not to read this through the lens of the American judicial system and think, wow, what a wacky world that was. Because it was a wacky world and not like ours today,
which
I think makes this harder to understand.
And it's one of those things where even, regardless of how you feel about the consistency or the level of American justice, it's still come a long way from the way the ancient world was. In that, and it wasn't just the Jews. It wasn't just the Jews in the ancient Near East. This was kind of common all the way to the Greeks. With Aeschylus's famous cycle of plays, the Oresteia, the classic blood feud issue, which is, if somebody dies, their nearest blood relative is responsible for killing.
Even in the score.
Right. But the problem was, and again, this is what, the Greeks, like in Aeschylus's The Oresteia, illustrates, and they're trying to find a way.
What is that, by the way?
A trilogy of plays about Orestes. Yeah, sorry.
I added that for y'all.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And me too.
But the whole issue was, because the cycle would become then, okay, so you accident, you kill me either, however you kill me, whether it's intentional or not, my son now has to kill you. But when my son kills you, your son needs to kill my son. So the whole point was,
the Hatfields and the McCoys.
And a never-ending cycle of bloodshed and violence. And so the ancient Greeks came up with their solution and that they record in some of their literature and their but the same thing. This was God's off-ramp for an ancient world in which the blood feud was all too real, which is but there still was a growing level of justice because the cities of refuge
they're not for everybody and they're not for every act of murder.
You could run there if you wanted, but there was still going to be an inquiry made about the circumstances of the person you killed. And if it was a bona fide accident or then you could stay in the city of refuge and not be killed by the avenger of the victim. But however, if it was deemed genuine murder, then you were to be executed still.
Right.
So again, it was not a get out of jail. The city of refuge was not a get out of jail free card. I couldn't lie in wait or be sick of you and decide to kill you and then run the city of refuge and no consequences. No, there's still be an inquiry made about the circumstances of how what I had to do with your death. And but if it was some sort of accidental, I was swinging my hammer and it slipped out of my hand, hit you in the skull, crushed your skull, you die. One of your sons can't cut me down and put me to death now if I'm in the city of refuge. But again, it wasn't perfect justice even then. I mean, it was God's, kind of reining in the hardness of the human heart, because if I left the city of refuge and one of your sons found me, he could still kill me.
Well, what's interesting, though, is that it's at least an attempt to say that not all cases of death, premature death,
are equal,
are the same.
Right.
That's exactly right.
That's
not all cases where someone does something that results in a death are the same and should be treated the same
way. That's right. Not every death, even if somebody else is involved in the circumstance of the death, is necessarily murder or needs to draw the harshest possible penalty, which is, an eye for an eye or in this case, a life for a life. And so, yeah, here you have God, in his wisdom and then trying to, again, give a law that's going to make his people stand out in the world. Because remember, the Greeks are,
higher standard.
The Greeks are working some of this out till much later. Here's in the days of Moses in the mid-second millennium where God's saying, yeah, we're not going to do this anymore. My people are not, this is not justice. This is not how we respect life. Or deal with the fallenness of the world, or the violence of a fallen world, or the fact that there's tragic death in this fallen world. My people are not going to deal with the blood for blood,
endless feud.
Because again, that's the thing is, even if your son kills me in vengeance because he's upset I dropped my hammer and crushed your skull, then my son has to go after your son, and it never ends. And God, you know, because, and that's part of the problem with human vengeance, rooted in anger rather than a genuine, what does it really take to set things to rights? There is no off-ramp to human vengeance.
Moving us toward the New Testament, where vengeance is mine and I will repay.
And that's right.
In the case of personal vengeance.
That's right. You know, and even in anticipation of that, you know, Isaiah talking about, you know, the government on the Messiah's shoulders. You know, there is only one who could really bring the true justice, who can truly balance guilt and innocence and culpability and responsibility and set things to right in a way that is truly the resetting of the scales. You know, human justice will never do that. And so this fallen world in the meantime, until the Messiah comes, until his, you know, until all things are made new in the final reign of the Son at the end, what are we going to do? And this is, at least in the Old Testament, this was God's first step towards, we're not going to do what's been done. people are not going to live this way.
And that's hear that last thing Jeff said, because I think that's really important. It's God's way of intervening in this ugly mess of blood feuds and saying, all right, we're going to raise a standard. We're going to be that way. We're
right.
gonna live differently. And it's a first step toward correcting this inhumane treatment that was going on among humanity at that time and moving his people to a higher standard.
Yeah. And I think there's one other thing that's worth noticing, you know, too, though it's a short chapter, it really does give you a lot of food for thought, and it's this. As much as the book of Joshua has been a by and large positive book, full of God keeping his promises, overwhelming victories, you see faithfulness even down to individual level with Caleb and Joshua getting his inheritance here in the past couple of weeks in the readings we've been doing. You know, despite all of the blessing of God at this point, the story is primarily about the blessing of God and the keeping of promises and the fulfillment of longtime yearnings and hopes of the people. It's still a fallen world. And even when God is involved in this world and God is doing good things in this world, there will still be time and chance. There will still be brokenness. There will still be sin. There will still be, even in the midst of a promised land and a blessed people, there will still be things that don't go right. And we're not just talking about the sin of murder. We're talking about accidentally killing somebody through some unfortunate circumstance and then having to, you know, spend your time in a city of refuge. Right. You know, because bottom line is life matters to God and death is still a serious issue. Right. And it's still a way of just saying life and death really matter, even if it's not your fault. Ultimately, life and death matter. So it's still a fallen world. And I think it still brings us over to the New Testament, where we want to take New Testament promises today. And even people begin to try to bring heaven on earth, you know, and expect God to do more than he's ever going to do in this world.
Why should I ever suffer or have any calamity in my life?
That's right. This is a reminder that it's only, you know, the rule of King Jesus, you know, and it's full revelation in the last day when all things are set right and all things are made new. Here's a down payment on this principle. It's still a fallen world, and there are still going to be sin and unfortunate tragedy that are going to mar our otherwise blessed life in this world as the people of God.
Right. So you got these cities, and that's what chapter 20 is going to be about, these cities scattered throughout the land.
Yeah, and there's well spaced. If we play them on a map, it's three on one side of Jordan, three on the other side, north, middle, south, so that if you got, you know, if you accidentally killed a coworker at work, accidentally, you got a close place to run to.
You got one nearby.
Yeah.
So that's... that's the layout of the chapter, but as Jeff said, there are some heavier questions to be pondered and considered as you work your way through chapter 20 this week.